They say it's in your blood, a game that can't be won, only played. A love affair. It satisfies the soul and frustrates the intellect. The greatest game ever played, golf. It's real. And this is Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of legendary golfer Billy Casper, talking golf with you for more than two decades. And now, here's Brian and Bob.
Yeah, thank you very much and welcome into the show. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper with you. We've just been chatting with our friends on our flagship station, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. But what a great Players Championship. Scottie Scheffler doing what has never been done in the Players, and that is back-to-back wins at the Players Championship. The 50th, the golden playing, the golden anniversary, if you will, of the Players Championship. And wouldn't you know it, the golf world needed a star to step up. Scottie Scheffler provided just that. Tied the low score of the week with a 64 in that final round. Posted that number, said, come and get me, boys, and they all just came up one short. But, man, that was impressive stuff and kind of the shot in the arm that pro golf needed. You could sit back, sort of forget about everything else, and just enjoy some spectacular golf for some great players doing what they do on a grand old stage. And I'll tell you what, major or not, the Players' Championship has cemented themselves, and this was a huge one for them. I think this is one that will go down in lore. I think back, Bob, in our preview, we talked about Ricky Fowler and the way he won in dramatic fashion. I think that was all the way back in 2015 at this point in time. So it's been a while since we've had the drama that we saw, and it came right up to the last putt that was in, and then it wasn't, from Wyndham Clark.
Wow, that was crazy. You know, he did everything he needed to do. It was interesting to me. He hit a four iron off the tee because he wanted to make sure that he gave himself a chance and didn't want to push the issue down to get the ball down too far down the fairway and bring all the other stuff into play, and then hit a great shot in there. Didn't bounce up, but, you know, from 17 or 18 feet, hit a wonderful putt, made sure it had plenty of speed on it, and that it had a chance to go in, but it just caught the lower end of the hole, dove down about halfway, and then came all the way back out again. So, unfortunately, Wyndham didn't make it into the playoff, but Scottie Scheffler became the back-to-back winner.
A cruel game sometimes, isn't it? It is an absolutely cruel game. I mean, the double half clutch, he clutched twice, Bob, before he was about to fist pump, because he thought he made that first time in the heart, then he thought it was going to lip in from the low side. Both of them came up wanting, unfortunately, and Wyndham Clark just missed out, and he was gutted. We'll hear from Wyndham. We're going to hear from Scottie, of course. We'll hear from Rex Hager from Golf Channel and America's favorite caddy. Just getting started here on Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
All right, welcome back. It's Real Golf Radio. Brian and Bob with you here, looking back at last week's Players' Championship. And as we were just talking about in that first segment there in the Open, it was one of those golf tournaments that really felt like we needed to see something that's been needing to happen. It's interesting that the rhetoric has been over the last couple of weeks about division in the game and the pro game. And then it's about how come we haven't had the best players in the world step up. And then back-to-back weeks, you've got exciting tournaments with Scottie Scheffler, the number one player in the world, winning both at Bay Hill and again repeating, becoming the first to do so in the 50-year history of the Players, and wins there at TPC Sawgrass with, again, Wyndham Clark both times chasing him down and finishing runner-up. But this one in particular, it had a different feel to it, and I love what the caddy said to us last week, Bob. You know it's different because you're wanting to watch it on Thursday and Friday. You're wanting to tune in and see what happens. You want to listen to the press conferences on Tuesday and Wednesday. Those are major kind of weeks. So I love that the conversation this week wasn't around should the Players be a major. It feels like it's had its own identity. And this one in particular ranks high on the excitement meter, which I think only adds to the lore. It's the 50th anniversary. It was done in impressive fashion with a tournament tying 64 in the final round by the number one player in the world. Heartbreak for Wyndham Clark on the last. I mean, it really had everything you could ask for.
It was amazing. Right from the get-go, in that final round, it was really, really fun to kind of see all the groups teeing off and would anybody make a charge and kind of kind of waiting to see what was going to happen with Scottie Scheffler because of a slow start, not making a birdie on the second hole. And then wham, he holds it out on the fourth hole, birdies the fifth hole, and then he birdies eight and nine and shoots five under par the front nine. And I was absolutely riveted to the television trying to see what was going to happen on that back nine. But, you know, like you said, having Scottie Scheffler, Brian Harman, Xander Schauffele, Wyndham Clark, Matthew Fitzpatrick, all those guys right in the mix, and the excitement of what was going on, especially with, you know, the reigning U.S. Open champion, the reigning Open champion, you know, Xander, of course, the Olympic champion, and Scotty, a Masters champion. It was really, really, really cool. And as if I'm projecting this forward to kind of see what's going to happen over the next little bit and into the Masters, Scottie Scheffler went on a tear like this when he won his first Masters. And here we are ramping up to this year's Masters. And he's going to be definitely the favorite, but he's going to be tough. He's going to be really tough to beat because of his ball striking and also what he's been able to figure out with his putting.
Here is Scheffler talking about that final round.
You know, I just wanted to get off to a good start on the front nine. I felt like if I could shoot a low round on the front nine, you know, and put myself in back in right into the tournament, that was really my goal. And, you know, I was hoping to make some early birdies. And, you know, I parred the first three, and then the hole out really got me going there on number four. And, yeah, I made some nice putts to close out the back nine. You know, when I was looking at the leaderboard, I saw that they were starting, or Xander was starting at 17, Wyndham was starting at 16. And so, I mean, I needed some help, obviously, going into today if I wanted to win the tournament. And I felt like if I could go out and shoot a good round on the front nine, I could put myself in it as long as, you know, one of them didn't shoot, you know, four or five under on the front as well. And so the birdie on nine was huge. And, you know, I was right in the tournament the whole back nine.
Do you pride yourself on your ability to close tournaments?
I'm going to get to that one here in a minute because I had to laugh at that little comment as well. Of course, he prides himself on closing it out. But he said that right there to me was huge. That was a player that knows he's the best player in the world.
Yeah.
And he had a game plan. He had confidence in his game and his ability. And he knew that if he could go out there, this is not what he said, but he said without saying, is that he knew that if he could go out there and put his name on top of that leaderboard and let those guys see him coming up from behind and chasing him down, that would put the pressure on them to the point where he might have the opportunity. He acknowledged that he needed the help, but he did what he needed to do to put the pressure on the leaders and force them to struggle a little bit. And, you know, when Wyndham Clark was asked when did he notice Scottie Scheffler, he said on 11, he looked at the board and he's like, oh, of course. And he goes, he's the best player in the world. And that's all he wanted to say about it. Yep. But that's the kind of stuff that Tiger used to do. Now, I don't want to compare him because he had a joke about Tiger and all that kind of stuff. They were teasing him about comparing him to Tiger, and he handled it brilliantly, right? He acknowledged that Tiger's in a league of his own in this game. But what he did was Tiger-like in the sense that he is the best player in the game. He knows that they know that he's the best player in the game, and all he needs to do was put himself there, play his game, and, you know, see if anybody can come and get him. And they just fell short. And we saw that time and time again with players trying to chase Tiger Woods down when he was at his prime. And so, again, not here to say he's the next Tiger Woods. Don't misunderstand. But what I'm saying is he is owning that. And what I love about it is he'll never say it because Scottie Scheffler's a humble guy. He's going to talk about how doesn't matter where I put my trophies, or Meredith will slap me upside the head if I get too cocky or whatever, that his what's at home's more important. But when he's out there, he is playing like same as Tiger Woods. Tiger didn't share the same, like, home, this isn't a big deal attitude like Scotty does, but when they're in the arena, when they're between the ropes, they are playing at that same dominant level. And that stood out to me maybe more than even Scotty when he won his Masters. That was just a really impressive display on what he did on Sunday.
It was. And if you want to go back a day prior, on Saturday afternoon when he finished the golf tournament or finished his final three holes, he birdied the last three holes on Saturday to get himself in the position and to keep that momentum going to go into Sunday as well. And, you know, we always talk And we've talked with the caddy many times about that finish there, 16, 17, and 18 at the Players Championship and what you can do on 16 and what could happen to you on 17 as well as 18. And he finishes birdie, birdie, birdie. That was an amazing stretch of golf to get himself into the position to where he could do what he did on Sunday.
Well, look, he just made it. He's won his eighth for the eighth time on the PGA Tour, right? Yep. And if you start to recap his eight wins, you know where it starts? 2022 Phoenix. In Phoenix.
Yep.
2022. It's still sometimes, if you're about to write the date down, you might even write 2022. It's not that long ago. 2022, yep. Bob. And since that time, he has eight wins, and he's 27 and a half years old, essentially. And they've all come, but the next players that have done that in that same time span, Rory and Rom both have five.
Yep.
And he has eight.
Yep.
So, I mean, he also tied Rom with the most wins since the two of them joined the tour in 2019, 2020. Or at least since he started the tour in 2019 and 2020. So I look at that, and here's another one that jumps out. The first player with multiple wins in three consecutive PGA Tour seasons since Dustin Johnson did it in 2015-16 through 2017-18. I mean, This is the kind of stuff he's doing. The first player to successfully defend his title at the Players' Championship. In 50 years of playing it. The eighth multiple winner of the Players' Championship and the first since Tiger Woods won his second back in 2013. So it just doesn't happen all that often. And he's doing those kinds of things, which is impressive.
Yeah, and you talk about back-to-back year wins. Like you said, the Players' Championship, he won the Arnold Palmer Invitational, has won that a couple of times now. He won also at in Phoenix. Back-to-back. So he's not immune. You almost like Tiger, like we were talking about, but Tiger had multiple wins, you know, in Jack's event, in San Diego, all that kind of thing. And Scottie Scheffler's just starting his career and just starting to win. Now he's got eight, but he's got two wins at Arnold Palmer Invitational. He's got two wins at the Players, and he's got two wins in Phoenix. He's slowly ticking up those wins on courses that fit him and that he's very comfortable at when he's playing at his best.
Also Tiger-like. I mean, you look at the bulk of Tiger's wins came on like six golf courses, right?
Yep.
So, impressive stuff. Hey, when we come back, Rex Hoggard is going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on what Scottie Scheffler did, but also his thoughts on the meeting that took place this week between the player directors and Yasser from the PIF. So all that's coming up next. Rex Hoggard, Golf Channel, joins us right here on Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Thanks again for joining us here on Real Golf Radio, looking back at the Players Championship and what an event it was. And the man that was on site for the entire week for Golf Channel and golfchannel.com is our good friend Rex Hoggard joining us right now. Rex, how's it going, man?
Great. It's a good week at the Players Championship and got a couple days off before we start up again. It was perfect.
Yeah. So it felt like there was this rhetoric going around the last few weeks about, you know, with the splintering of the top players, that you weren't seeing maybe the same excitement at the top of the game, and that we're having a bunch of first time winners and not seeing the names that everybody expects to be winning golf tournaments. And then suddenly Scottie Scheffler goes back to back at Arnold's event. And then again at the Players, and all of the excitement and the drama that unfolded, it just felt like it was one of those tournaments that maybe we sort of needed, gave us a little shot in the arm. It was kind of the edge of your seat viewing that I think a lot of golf fans have missed lately. What was your take being right there up close?
No, I agree with it. I mean, you go back to the West Coast and we all know you had terrible weather. Probably leaderboards, especially at the signature event, that didn't live up to the hype, to be quite honest with you. Nothing against Wyndham Clark winning at Pebble Beach, but we had a 54-hole event because of weather and didn't play on Sunday and just nasty conditions. So it just wasn't living up to, I'm sure, what the tour was hopeful for. And I think you got back-to-back weeks. You pointed out Bay Hill. Now, I was a little bit subdued, I think, just because Scottie won by five strokes. So there wasn't a whole lot of drama there. But certainly when you look at everything that went into the Players' Championship on an iconic venue. You had four, I think five, of the top 10 players essentially going head-to-head within the top 10 on Sunday. And I think that's all you can really ask for, including Scotty Scheffler. You had Xander Schauffele playing well. Wendell Clark was right there in it. Brian Harman, Louis Aubert. Like, it was just exactly what the tour needed. It was a shot in the arm. And the fact that it came down to the 72nd hole, that's as good as golf gets. That's as good as the PGA Tour gets right now. And I think it was badly needed.
Yeah, that that lip out on the final hole, that was kind of crazy to see that happen. And especially with the pace that the ball was rolling and that kind of thing. But, you know, what's interesting to me is the ratings the last couple of weeks and the ratings all year have been kind of been down with golf. And do you feel that's mostly because of the fracturing and golf fans are getting a little kind of put off about everything? But do you think it will bring back some of those golf fans basically from what we saw last week as well?
I think there is some fatigue among the fans. And look, Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, addressed this last week at the Players' Championship when he spoke with the media. This is going to be a tough hurdle for the PGA Tour. It's going to be have to be something they embrace, because you can say all of the things that have to happen going forward for the game to be reunited, and I do think the game needs to be reunited, and whatever that looks like, I don't pretend to be smart enough to figure that out. But probably the biggest hurdle once all of those things are set in place is winning back the fans. Because for the last 2 years, golf, professional golf, has been about nothing but how much money is this guy getting paid, and signature events, and mergers, and multi-billion dollar deals. And I just think there was a tipping point for a lot of the fans that they had heard enough. And when you have an event like we had last week at the Players' Championship, where everything seemed to fall into place, that yeah, you are going to pay attention to what the fans have to say. And I will give the tour credit. I think they're going to try to understand the issue.
Rex Hager joining us here on Real Golf Radio. Scotty Scheffler kind of comes off as an aw shucks. I'm just out here playing golf. It's not that important. It's, you know, I have other things that are more important to me. But he is doing things between the ropes that you start to compare a little bit to some of the greats, you know. Not that, and he did a good job deflecting the Tiger Woods comparisons. Nevertheless, he went out there on the final day, got it going early, posted a number, and the rest of the guys took notice and couldn't quite, you know, come back to what he had posted. What's your take on Scotty Scheffler as his role as the number one player in the world right now and the way he's playing?
It was very Tiger-esque, and I hate doing that. I mean, I'm like you guys. I just don't like comparing anyone to Tiger because I don't think it's a fair comparison. You're talking about a generational player, but he actually did something Tiger Woods has never even done. Jack Nicklaus hasn't done it. Won back-to-back at the Players' Championship, and it's really hard to do that at that course. I actually wrote about this early last week, trying to figure out exactly why. I think there's a lot of it that goes into the idea that that golf course doesn't really fit one style of play. So if you're John Rahm and you show up at the Masters, or you're Scotty Scheffler and you show up at the Masters, you've kind of proven, you've seen that this golf course fits your game. That doesn't necessarily hold true year in and year out at the Players' Championship. But you look at what he did, so went back-to-back at Bay Hill, where Tiger has been dominant, at the Players, where Tiger has won multiple times. And yeah, I think that is a fair comparison. And then you factor in, he kind of did make it look easy when you consider that he clearly didn't have his best stuff, that he was dealing with an injury, whatever level you want to ascribe to that. Now, clearly on Friday, when he initially hurt his neck, it was probably close to an 8 out of 10. By the time we got to Sunday, I think he dismissed it, and it was probably closer to a 4 or a 5 out of 10. Whatever number you want to put on it, it's still pretty impressive when you consider talking with Ted Scott, his caddy, where he was shocked that he was even able to finish. On Friday, he said he didn't think he was going to be able to finish the tournament. He said, when you point out that, he said how much pain he was in when he was just trying to hit chip shots. Forget about hitting a driver or an 8-iron from the fairway. Just hitting chip shots hurt. So you factor all those things in, and again, I hate to do it, and I don't do this lightly, but it was Tiger-esque.
You know, the interesting thing is that we've always known Scotty Scheffler as a ball striker, a guy that from tee to green is absolutely on a different level compared to everybody else. And it showed again this last week in, you know, points gained off of the tee or between tee to green. But he's figuring out, and he's figured out, 2 for 2 with that mallet putter. He's still hitting some putts that he kind of scratches his head about, but I'll tell you what, he's making a lot more putts right now. And that just, I think, propels him closer to where he wants to be going into Augusta.
And I think we've all come to agree that the idea, he doesn't have to putt great. He doesn't have to do what he did Sunday at Bay Hill, where I think he was first in field, picked up 4.5 strokes on the green in strokes gained putting. He doesn't have to do that. If he just putts average, and that's pretty much what he did at TPC Sawgrass. He was a little bit above average, but he wasn't giving away strokes. He's going to win more times than not. You look at what he did last year, and I'm talking about Postmasters. Like after he had gone on his run and won for the multiple times and won the major championship, you look at what he did after the Masters, and he did it kind of ho-hum, but I think he finished outside the top 10 just once the rest of the season. And that had everything to do with the fact that he's such a good ball striker, so much better than everyone else, and he struggled so much. You can look at it. It's quantifiable. And again, whenever you say this, I think it's important to point out, he struggled. He wasn't a good putter relative to the rest of the PGA Tour. That's quantifiable. And when you see the turnaround, when you see what he can do when he's just average, it's got to be intimidating.
Rex Hager joining us here on Real Golf Radio. Let's talk about some of those runners-up. You look at Harmon and Clark are both current major championship holders, and they both got themselves in the mix. What does it say about those two players that I think surprised a lot of people last year by winning major championships to still be playing at that level? I don't mean to even say it that way. That kind of leads into my question. That's the leading part of my question. But what does it say about these players that they are playing on such a high level at this point and relatively under the radar?
It was funny. Early Sunday, I was just kind of taking some notes based on what I thought would happen. And at that point, I thought it was Wyndham tournament to lose. Because, you know, he kind of had to play. If he shoots anything in the 60s, 68, 69, that means that Scotty's got to shoot something around 62. And that's really, really hard on that golf course. And when I start looking back at the last 12 months for Wyndham Clark, there's no reason he's not a superstar. He has Hollywood good looks. He has just a made-in-Hollywood origins story. And he's done it in the biggest events, really, since he started winning last year. Wells Fargo was a signature event last year, and then he wins the U.S. Open in Los Angeles, which is perfect. He wins the signature event at Pebble Beach this year, and then he caps that with the Players' Championship. He's easy to kind of overlook because he's done it so quickly, and he's ascended sort of that wall so quickly. But when we talk about capturing the fan imagination and creating stars, I think the line that Jay Monahan, the commissioner, used last week that he attributed to Jason Gore was, the PGA Tour can create a star in 3 weeks. I would say that you have created a star essentially in 3 weeks with Wyndham Clark. And I was a little surprised that he didn't get it done, but the fire burns bright. And I think for him specifically, I would not be surprised if he puts himself right back into contention at the Masters.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Hey, the big story also coming off of the Players was the commissioner addressing the media and the fans, and then the announcement that there was a meeting in the Bahamas between the player directors and Yasser with the PIF fund. This is obviously a huge story that has dominated this game for a few years now. What's your sense of what might have taken place, or have you heard anything about what may have, if anything, gotten accomplished in this meeting?
I don't know what got accomplished as far as, you know, ticking things off a checklist. I think the biggest deal is what Adam Scott told us last week. He was one of those six player directors who flew to the Bahamas and met with the governor of the Public Investment Fund. He said essentially it was just to put a name to a face. And I asked Rory on Sunday. Rory had met Yasser Al-Rumayyan at the end of 2022. And I asked Rory, what do you hope the message is that the players get from him? And he said, just to understand what the PIF wants to do in the game of golf. He also sort of made an interesting take as well that he feels like LIV Golf and specifically Greg Norman have kind of misrepresented what the PIF wants to do in golf, that they want to be part of the ecosystem. They don't want to take over the ecosystem. So my guess is it was a lot of conversations along those lines, that the player directors really needed to know face-to-face what he hopes to accomplish. And it was a good first step. And I have to be careful saying that because I said it on air and kind of got beat up a little bit on social media. This has nothing to do with whether you think the PGA Tour should be in business with public investment in Saudi Arabia. That's an entirely different question. And I understand it from both sides, and everyone is welcome to their opinion. I think we're at the point now where you're sort of resigned to the fact that there will be some sort of deal between the tour and the PIF. Right now, it's just a matter of what that deal will look like. And this, in that context, as far as just essentially just business, it was a good step. Because if they feel like it's time to bring the player directors in, we can all agree, the player directors aren't the ones that are negotiating this deal. That would make no sense. They're not staring at spreadsheets and haggling over billions of dollars. They'll just make the final vote. And if Jay Monahan and the rest of the leadership at the tour felt like now was the time to have them meet, I think that is an indication that the negotiations are a little bit further along than we probably thought.
So it's kind of interesting where, you know, we're having these meetings and that kind of thing. How soon can this happen? I mean, you know, there's a lot being said, you know, it's not going to happen for another 2 or 3 years. You know, it's going to take a year for the DOJ to approve stuff. Realistically, how soon could something happen between PIF and the PGA Tour enterprises to be able to put something together?
I mean, if both sides were motivated, I would think that they could come up with something starting next year. I think this year is pretty much the ship has sailed on that one. I think both products are far enough down the line. I'm talking about LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. But if both sides are motivated and want something to happen, then yeah, I don't think next year is out of the question. There's a lot of contracts that probably have to get renegotiated. There's a lot of venues that probably have to get changed. And there's a lot of thinking behind closed doors because, again, we have no idea what a potential deal between those two sides, and it would also include the DP World Tour, would look like. I mean, Rory has kind of speculated on a global tour. He addressed it again on Sunday and said, because where we are right now is, how does team golf fit with individual golf? And Rory's take was, it would be on the quote-unquote periphery, which I would imagine could mean LIV does their team events in January, February, and October, November, December, and everything else in between is PGA Tour golf, major champions, individual golf that we know it, as we've always known it. But you really never know. Like, that's one of the big complicated things that will certainly make the negotiations difficult. The other half is how will the players who join LIV Golf be allowed to come back, if at all, to the PGA Tour? So there's a lot of complicated things that have to happen between now and then. But like I said, if both sides decide that this is best for golf and let's make this happen, there's a lot of money and a lot of important people in that room. They'll make it happen.
It's March Madness. That means the Masters is just around the corner. How excited are you for the next major championship?
I listened to Jon Rahm's Masters preview interview. It was a Zoom press conference interview and got really excited. Like, it doesn't really sink in until you get the parking pass mailed to you and everything sort of starts heading. Start thinking about the first year's first major championship. And it's funny. I mean, given what we just got through talking about, we won't have this conversation anymore. And I think last year, to a certain degree, normalized the major championships that, okay, there will be the PGA Tour players and the LIV players, the best players in the game, competing. And I think it's only made the majors that much better. Like, we're all going to be excited to see Jon Rahm left. He was the second best player in the world. My guess is he's still going to play like the second best player in the world. So I think it gives us all something to look forward to.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if you can hear that, but that is my parking pass right there, as you said. That does get you excited. So.
And our print-off credential, too.
Rex, you're the best, man. Thanks so much for taking some time. Really appreciate the insights, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
See you guys at the Masters.
There you go. Rex Hoggard. Boy, those were great words. See you at the Masters. I'll take that any day. Man, that sounded good. Rex Hoggard, Golf Channel and golfchannel.com. More of the show coming up next.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome back. It's Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper. Thanks again to Rex Hoggard. Hey, if you missed that interview and you want to check it out, you can do so at your convenience by just searching Real Golf Radio wherever your favorite podcasts are found. We'll put that up there for you. You will listen to the segments, the interviews, or the show in its entirety at your convenience. Just search Real Golf Radio. You can also hit us up on X. At Real Golf is our X handle, and Real Golf Radio on the rest of social media. Hey, by the way, I did want to mention, having a little vacation this weekend down at Black Desert in St. George, Utah, playing the golf course. It is, like I said, you've heard me talk about it. It's unbelievable. The tour coming in for a FedEx fall event in October, the 10th through the 13th. Can't wait to see what these guys will do. But golf course was amazing. I finally starting to dial in the new Apex Pro 24 irons. And it took a little time. When you get them in the spring, put the new Axiom shafts from Fujikura in, and just, Bob, finally grooved them. And man, they feel good. I'll tell you what, they are just a little bit longer on the long irons, I've noticed specifically. The long irons just feel like they're so much easier to hit than my old Apex 24s. Really, really good. I've also, the UT, the 23 degree UT, I'm putting that in place of the 4-iron and in place of a hybrid. I actually took out a hybrid to go with that utility iron, and that thing's been really good, really, really good. So There you go. Just got to throw that out there. If you're thinking about some irons, give a look on those Apex Pros. And they've done a phenomenal job there at Callaway. So pretty fun stuff. Be able to hit all kinds of shots with them. So there you go.
Gotta like it.
Okay.
Gotta like it.
All right. I thought you were going to jump in and help me out there, but that's fine. I'll just leave it out there and everybody else can be like, what's he talking about? Well, he's talking about is he likes his new irons. That's what you can take away. I like my new Apex Pros from Callaway.
All right. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. There's nothing wrong with that. All right. Fine.
I'll let you gloat all you want.
I'm not even gloating. I'm just excited about it and I want everybody to know it. So, all right. Let's move on. Here we go. Here's Rory.
I think it should have happened months ago. So I'm glad that it's happening and, you know, hopefully that progresses conversations and gets us closer to a solution.
Rory talking about the meeting that took place this week. Rex, you heard him talking about it. And we did, in fairness to Rex, we talked with him earlier in the week before some more of this news came out. Bob Herrig with Sports Illustrated writing that, you know, some of the synopsis as he was there at the Valspar this week, talked to Webb Simpson and Peter Malnati. And basically Peter Malnati saying, hey, we knew we were talking to a golf nut, speaking of Yasser, right? He was really engaged, something he wants to be a part of. Webb Simpson saying it was the next right thing to do. And the Tiger was very engaged. So what we do know, according to Bob Herrig, is that Tiger and Yasser played golf there. It is a private club there in Nassau, Bahamas, and where he hosts the Hero World Challenge. And that all six player directors were there. And Jay Monahan, a couple SSG guys, and Joe Ogilvy, by the way, the newly appointed liaison, yes. He was there as well. And Webb said it was really a meet and greet and learn. That was what he took out of it. Didn't feel like, you know, they were necessarily closer. Doesn't know where it goes from here or how quickly it goes from here. But he said it was good to help understand where he was coming from. I thought it was interesting. One of the comments he made is he said, look, this is a guy that chairs like 140 boards. But when you sit down and talk to him, it's like talking to another human being. That was kind of a funny kind of quote. Yeah. I think that's how a lot of people feel when they get a chance to talk to a PGA Tour player or some other star or celebrity that they hold in high esteem. Is at the end of the day, you're just another human being and we're all trying to communicate and get certain things done and how can we work together, right? That's people that figure out how to unlock that whole thing are successful. And so it sounds like from that standpoint, there was at least a successful connection made there. And where it goes from here, we'll see. But Bob Herrig, in his report, again on SI, suggesting that we're maybe not any closer to getting something done than they were previously, other than they've now met each other.
Yeah, well, you know, initially, back in June of last year, that framework agreement came about. And, you know, they were saying that it shouldn't take very long to get everything worked out as far as implementing it. And they put it to the end of the year. That didn't happen. Now we've got the end of this month before the Masters. So we'll see if that happens. But at least this is a step in the correct direction to be able to get everybody in the same room, to be able to have everybody feel what each other is looking for and what the visions are for the PGA Tour going forward, PGA Tour Enterprise, SSG, PIF and everything concerned with it. I think it was a great move. It needed to be done. And especially with that deadline at the end of the month, we only had a couple more weeks before the month is done. And the Masters is right around the corner. So, it's really interesting to see how, this is all transpiring. The PGA Tour and Jay Monahan said everything's going to be tight-lipped. We're dealing with billions of dollars here and commercial enterprise and big corporations. So things have to be done in the right way behind closed doors and not letting the cat out of the bag, so to speak, with the public and the membership and that kind of thing, especially the membership at this point in time, although they will be the ones kind of with final say, so to speak, in what happens with the PGA Tour.
Well, I think if the one thing you learn from the way Jay Monahan ambushed everybody on June 6th is that you do need to communicate with the membership, and that's why they sent a memo. It was a bit of a generic memo to the players, kind of saying what happened there from the meeting, but I do think they'll do a better job of communicating, because when you hear Xander Schauffele's words from last week and how he says Jay Monahan has a long ways to go in his mind to basically prove that he's to trust. He said, trust is a delicate thing. So you can see that guys like Xander, probably doesn't represent himself alone, you know, felt a little betrayed and left to hanging on that announcement from June 6th. So I do think communications has to be much better. But yeah, negotiations of this type are delicate as well. And so you don't just go, hey, here's what we're hoping to do. I mean, that just kills your negotiation. You have to do it the right way, but you do need to communicate generally as much as you can with that membership. You know, speaking of Yasser, it's interesting because and you alluded to this earlier, Bob, but Rory had this to say about Yasser, and it's kind of interesting.
That fundamentally he wants to do the right thing. I think I've said this before, I have spent time with Yasser, and the people that have represented him in LIV, I think have done him a disservice. So Norman and, you know, those guys, I see the two entities, and I actually think there's a really big disconnect between PIF and LIV. I think you've got PIF over here and LIV are sort of out there sort of doing their own thing. So the closer that we can get to Yasser, PIF, and, you know, hopefully finalize that investment, you know, I think that would be a really good thing.
There's so much to unpack in that statement, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just hear the way he's trying to say it. In the one hand, he says he spent time with Yasser and that he fundamentally wants to do the right thing. Well, let me just start with that part. Part of me is like, well, fundamentally what he's trying to do is change the image that is not a good image of Saudi Arabia and the regime. So from that standpoint, fundamentally, I don't know where I feel about that. But okay, let's separate that for a minute. And he'll say he wants to do the right thing in investing like he has done in every other sport. Right? Right? Whether you agree, disagree, wherever you're at politically on that whole Saudi Arabia thing, it's sort of beyond my pay grade. But that's just kind of that just jumped out to me initially. So take that for what you want. The second thing he talked about is that the people, and he mentioned Norman, and he, by the way, he almost couldn't even say Norman. Do you notice like he went, Norman? Like he... He almost didn't want to even say it with any sort of like, you know, effort. He just kind of said it under his breath, Norman and the rest of the guys. But he essentially said they've misrepresented Yasser. And so if you look at that whole side of things, if he misrepresented Yasser, in some ways, you would almost say that the guys that Norman and the guys that went to LIV are sort of pawns in this thing. They're sort of, they were played a little bit. It almost feels like if you're sitting back going, hey, this isn't, Yasser, and we've suggested this on the show before, Bob, Yasser doesn't necessarily he didn't want to start a new golf league. He just wanted to invest in the top golf league. And when Jay Monahan gave him the Heisman, well, he's like, well, you need to take me seriously, and here's why, and I'll show you. This is how we do. He basically did a hostile takeover of the PGA Tour, right? And that's not unusual in a business setting. It's just I don't think the PGA Tour was prepared for it. Jay Monahan certainly wasn't prepared for it, and that's why when you study this whole thing in business classes going forward, I think Jay Monahan is going to look, you know, not very good by the way he handled it. He should have seen this coming. He should have taken it more seriously and been prepared for this. Anyway, I look at it and go, did these guys just totally get suckered? Now, you can't say they get totally suckered because they got a check that's real. That money in their bank is real. They've got a lot of money, and that is real, and you can't take that away.
So you're talking about the players.
I'm talking about the players that took the money, right? But at the same time, you almost wonder if they were literally like, oh, I can buy Bonds. You. Yeah, I can buy you. Well, look, if I throw this guy money, he'll take it, you know. And almost like he picked off the guys that were easy. They were the low hanging fruit. Yeah, I can get these guys with enough money, and he bought them. Yeah. And nobody wants to be quote unquote bought. I mean, all of us want a lot of money. We want to make a lot of money, but it almost feels like they were bought. So from that standpoint, that's the other piece of it that I kind of smile a little bit at. Like Yasser is, I mean, the PIF, the LIV guys are playing like they're the smart ones. Phil and all these guys, like they're the smart ones. Yasser seems to be the smart one in this. He's the one that's played it. He's the one with the seat at the table. Not Phil, not DJ, not Brooks. Yasser is the one that's going to have the seat at the table.
Absolutely. Yasser and the PIF. I thought Rory's comments were very enlightening where he talked about the disconnect with Yasser and the PIF fund and LIV Golf, that LIV and Greg Norman have not done PIF any favors. And so, I think Greg went in and took control of what he was given with LIV, and then he just kind of went after it. And maybe it wasn't along the lines that Piff or Yasser wanted to do. I don't know, but that's what Rory was insinuating with his comments about what's going on in the fracturing of the game right now. And so Rory's excited about what's going on and bringing it back together. I think players are starting to get excited about it. There's a lot of players that are probably say wait and see, and I'm kind of on that wavelength a little bit, but it looks like things are working in the right direction to make this thing happen and get it back on track for the reunification of the game of golf.
It's hard to go about doing things the way it should be done if you're blinded by revenge, and that's where Norman has been, and I think that's kind of what Rory was suggesting there. He also went on and was asked, and you heard Rex Hoggard talk to him or in our second segment, how he asked Rory this question about team golf and where it plays, and this was Rory's response.
They're big on team golf, and they want to see team golf survive in some way in the calendar. I don't think it has to necessarily look like LIV. I think, in my mind, you should leave the individual golf the individual golf, and then you play your team golf on the sort of periphery of that. So, but again, there's it's going to require patience, right? I mean, people have contracts that live up until 2028, 2029. I don't know if they're going to see that all the way out, but I definitely see LIV, playing in its current form for the next couple of years anyway, while everything gets figured out. I don't think this is an overnight solution, but, if we can get the investment in, then at least we can start working towards a compromise where, we're not going to make everyone happy, but at least make everyone understand why we're doing what we're doing.
Look, Rory's not a player director any longer, but you can count on the fact that he's involved in these discussions and knows what's going on. So there you go. He kind of summarized it very well. I want to talk more about this team golf concept and how it lives on coming up on the back nine. Hour number two. Stay tuned. That's next.